kingly confidence, masculine mastery, fearless freedom. Welcome to the podcast that supports you to show up in the world as the unapologetic, unfuckwithable, free-loving king you were born to be. Join Masculine Mastery Coach Mark Usher on a journey to releasing conditioned stories of unnecessary stress, struggle, and shame, while unlocking unlimited levels of inner peace, power, and prosperity in every area of your life. Fearless freedom comes to you as you self-authorize your masterpiece life, knowing in your truth, you move with nothing to prove. You are enough. And now, Mark.
Do you ever find in your everyday life your perception, your mind starting to feel a bit serious? Almost like there's a build-up of the seriousness of what is alive in the world. You know, at work, there's the meeting of directors, of your division, and everybody's a bit serious. It's all about the data, it's all about results, it's all about the goals hit or the goals not hit. It's all about the success or the failure. Life or death almost seems to be implied as a reality in so much of what we're doing, and yet there's no life or death. Actually, the vast majority of modern living, like death as a possibility, is the furthest reality that exists. Yet so much of the seriousness that is conditioned into us is almost this psychological condition that death is omnipresent. The death of ego, the death, the possibility that, you know, that failure could mean the death of your company, failure can mean the death of your reputation. And it takes on this seriousness that is so all-pervasive in modern society. The seriousness. It becomes, what I've noticed, is almost this role that we take on as adults. You know, to be an adult, an adult, to be a real man, there's so much conditioning that, you know, you've got to talk about politics. I mean, you can't be a real man if you don't talk about the politics of the day. You don't talk about the war that's on. You don't talk about the economy. Oh, the good old economy. You know, the situation in the world in 2020, 2021. I mean, there's, you know, the situation and we know the healthcare system and what's happening, what's not happening, and all this heaviness of what the powers that be at the moment, the top down, you know, all of these stories, the bombardment of stories. Effectively, you know, our minds are being controlled or trying to be controlled by the stories that we are being bombarded with. And you know, whether one agrees that there's a truth in these stories or not, the validity or invalidity of these stories, they're just one story. There's no absolute reality being bombarded at it. It's a one-sided story at all times. And yet at the core of these stories that we are being bombarded with, there's a seriousness. Have you noticed that? You know, if you notice, if you listen to the news, you read the newspaper, switch on the radio, or obviously it's more online stuff, the common story in the news that we are bombarded with, if you feel into your body, there's going to be a seriousness, there's going to be a felt tension in your body. There can be feelings of anxiety after listening to this. Quite often, men might even say, "No, it doesn't have that effect on me. No, I just listen to the news. Like, I mean, I need to keep up to date with what's going on in the world, and, you know, I need to know what's happening in the economy, like it affects me at work, and, you know, I can hear about these tragedies, the far side of the world, but, you know, after all, it's the far side of the world. No, it doesn't create any anxiety in me, it doesn't harden me, it doesn't have any effect like that in me. Maybe in other guys, but not me, right? And in many senses, these guys are actually right. I know myself at one point, I most definitely was in that sort of a scenario where I could look at any film, I could hear any news story, I could hear about local tragedies, I could hear about pretty much anything. And my nervous system wouldn't have really registered that there was a stress there. This mightn't be the healthiest sign. It's almost like the sign that the seriousness of life is so in the system that the nervous system has hardened to it. And so many of us as men, we camp out in the magician archetype. This part of our being, it's only one part of our psyche, one part of our mind. The magician is the rational mind. There's no feeling there. So we analyze. And it's such a power tool, but it's only the analysis part, it's the rational part, it's the figuring things out, cause-effect part, where you can pick apart the situation and come out with a rational solution. You can synthesize information that you have racked up, memories and data and information that you have in your memory, in the library of your mind, and you can take down, you know, memory points, factual information from the shelf. You can resynthesize it into creative ways where you piece information together to make out sort of what seems like a new creative thing, but it's a synthesis of what has been there from before. It's a wonderful tool, yet when we end up navigating life, camping out in our magician archetype, our rational mind, there's no feeling in this part. So we can, about 90% of men, that's predominantly where when they do deep shadow work and deep archetypal work, you know, and it's put to them when you have a deep awareness about what the different archetypes are. Four main masculine archetypes could be king, warrior, magician, lover. We can go into those in depth on a different day. 90% of men in this work will say, oh, wow, it's the magician archetype, it's the rational mind. When you break them all down like that, that's where I camp out the vast majority of the time. When we're camping out there, we don't actually feel the seriousness. We're so camping out in this unfeeling part where there's a lack of emotional connectedness, feeling in the body, that we can listen to the news reports, we can be in the meeting and stress, the hardened, stressed, anxious response is so set within the system that we don't even realize it's there. But in our body, you know, this is where you will pick it up. Maybe you mightn't pick it up consciously, this adult role of seriousness. It becomes such a default setting that consciously, as men, I know for so many years I didn't pick it up. My beautiful goddess, she could pick up within a nanosecond where I was at, where I was not, if I was relaxed, if I was, you know, my mood. I didn't really have such a cognizant awareness of where I was at. So often I'd be like, no, I'm fine. You know, I'd getting off the phone from my brother who was after triggering me. I'm the youngest of three brothers, you know, my older brothers. Me coming into unconsciously trying to find ways to shake off the little Mark. I'm even Mark Jr. My dad is Mark Sr. You know, they would have been classic times when I would have been triggered. The subconscious mind that was wanting, desiring, needing to step in, initiate into being my own man. You know, when subconsciously I was still playing the little Mark role, I'd get off a call with my brothers and, you know, I'd be little Mark again. I'd have unconsciously played out the little Mark role, the, you know, two older brothers, you know, I'm just after getting off the call and giving me advice again that was unwarranted or making judgments that, you know, I was feeling an anger, but I didn't know it was anger, and I wanted to set a boundary, but I didn't know I wanted to set a boundary, etc., etc. I was there. I'd get off a call, and my beautiful goddess knew well. Like, we talk about and we laugh now, you know, so many of these calls, she knew well. Now, I was caught up, if you want to say, I'm playing with the word, the seriousness. I was caught up in the seriousness of it all. My body would be tight, my heart, my voice would have communicated this. Caught up in the seriousness of it all. But I didn't really know. But how you end up knowing this as men, and I just touch base with yourself, on picking up the role of adult, serious, real man, that role of seriousness. You ever find that, like, you, when you get home from work, you're tired, you're exhausted? You ever find where there's a deep sense of satisfaction when you just get to crack open a bottle of beer, a whiskey when you get home? You know, it's like a glass of wine. It's like, you know, it's... And what is it that happens? It can be a glass of wine, or can be just TV, you know, TV, entertainment, something that just switches the mind off. What is it that happens in those moments? The role of seriousness, the thinking, the mulling over, the projections of the company, they're really serious. What's happening in the world is really serious. What'll the government do? There's the G7 summit, it's really serious. The economy, is it up, is it down? Oh God, the price, the stock exchange, the price of steel. Talking with somebody the other day, they were so concerned about the price of steel and the price of hardware, the price of timber, and so caught up. So your mind has been stuck in this mode subconsciously during the day, and by the time you get home, you know, there's some part of your body and your nervous system is just seeking a relief from this load of seriousness. This hyper-stimulated bombardment of stories that are designed to create a feeling of seriousness, a feeling of fear, a feeling of there's always a problem on the horizon. Then we seek relief. So many men are finding that in the privacy of their own lives and their own minds, they're seeking relief to sedate themselves from this feeling of seriousness, this feeling, you can call it stress, where at the end of their days, alcohol can be one thing that sedates it, that drops the nervous system back into, you know, I'm out of the octagon again, sink in. You can sit down and watch whatever program you get the chance. You just can be funny, can be whatever switches off. Actually, you just watch whatever switches your mind off, that you just go into a trance like, and your mind might even say, but I really love this program. And it's almost like the program can take on an importance. But deep down, you know, if you really drop in, and I ask you as always, you know, I invite you to make this conversation a real conversation, I invite you to drop in and what your evening, nightly, sort of habitual responses are, how you navigate your evening time. The evening time is really the key moment to start seeing what level of seriousness you have unwittingly invited into your life, into your nervous system. It's the evening time when, depending how you have been navigating your day, the evening time is when it will show up in your nervous system, because that's when, you know, scientifically, psychological research studies have found that that's when willpower has been burned up. If you have not been consciously managing your willpower, your decision-making capacities, by the end of the day, when you're coming into landing from 5, 6 p.m. onwards, your nervous system will give you signs as to how much seriousness it has had to deal with. And in the vast majority of cases, you know, not having been taught. Now, I bring this into the conversation here, as always, you know, becoming aware can be quite a provocative experience, because as men, we have been conditioned that we never want to fail. So a deep, open, provocative conversation that might seem to poke a stick at where you're fucking up, it's not. That's not the essence. Now, if your nervous system feels like, oh, Jesus, it's very difficult to open up to an awareness of, you know, some new part of your life where, oh, God, why, I haven't been doing that up to the best of my capacity, the best standard. There has been a conditioned part of our psyche as men that, oh, we're fucking up. It's another place where we're fucking up, we're not doing it right, I'm making a mistake here. And we can be hammered there again by the seriousness of life. We can be hammered by the bosses above us, by so many different factors, maybe our wives. There's different people poking energetic sticks at us. So by the end of the evening, like, the last thing we want is anybody else doing it. That's not the essence here. You know, the kings of freedom, you can only step into true, profound, embodied freedom by first becoming aware of how your nervous system has become imprisoned in a certain story that is taking on a seriousness. You know, seriousness in a nervous system, freedom in the nervous system is the polar opposite of that. Freedom in the nervous system is felt profound inner peace, where you're so dropped into your body, you can relax on command at any given moment. The question is, have you got that capacity within your body that at any given moment you can drop in to profound inner peace, complete relaxation, whenever you want, whenever you choose? I know myself, even now, that can be a struggle. More and more, I'm doing so many practices. I have aligned my life predominantly more and more and more from morning to evening to tend to my nervous system, to tend to my energy, to tend to my body, to tend to my mind, body, spirit, in such a way as to optimize my mind and nervous system's capacity to function in such a way that gives me a beautiful, wholehearted life experience where I can feel love, I can feel open, I can feel inspired, I can feel energized, I can feel zen-like presence in the moment, that I can navigate life. So in all of this, bottom line, a lot of men are finding that by the end of the day, they are using subconscious sedation strategies to bring their nervous system home, to help it switch off. Because we haven't been trained. That's actually the thing I was wanting to say, is like, we haven't been trained about the mind. We haven't been trained about our energetic system. We haven't been trained or educated in any way at all about the psyche, the soul, psychology, psyche. The root of the word psyche, it means soul. So the study of the soul. We haven't been trained or educated in this, in how to navigate this or optimize our approach. Hence, we're not actually feeling very free in ourselves. So, as a result of not being educated at all and trying to figure it out by ourselves, and figuring it out by ourselves after inheriting a masculine inner operating system that, you know, leans into lone wolfing, doing it by ourselves, figuring out by ourselves, never like feeling that seeking out support or help is like the ultimate sign of weakness, we end up taking upon ourselves a lot of seriousness, a lot of hardness within our nervous system that is absolutely unnecessary. And as a result, we just end up having these deep felt needs for relief. Human needs for relief at the end of our days. This becomes a regular strategy, and if we don't become aware, you know, these can become addictions. Reaching to porn, excessive masturbation, drink, alcohol, drugs, online just going online, social media, etc., etc., seeking out entertainment. And ultimately, there's a big price to pay because, you know, especially if you're married and you've kids, that means that your biggest window of family time is when you're in that time where you're seeking relief, you're seeking sedation after a long, hard day at work and out in the big, bad world, the jungle that's out there. That means that almost like your greatest levels of energy and awareness were given in the work arena. And when you come home, that's when you're least present. That's when you're least feeling openly, wholehearted, available to the people around you. No right or wrong here, but this just ends up that there's a big price to pay. In today's episode, I want to introduce, there's a bit of building the context here about the adult role of seriousness. And the context there, adult role of seriousness, like, dip back into childhood. You know, think about how playful you were as a kid. And some people would go, well, I wasn't very playful. At some point, you were. The inner child in us is a very playful, spacious, humorous, creative, inspired being. You know, there's no rules in the inner child. And yet, the more we went through life, the socialization process, what a fucking pile of bullshit that is. And if me calling it a pile of bullshit triggers you, good. I think of, was it Krishnamurti's quote? I'm going to paraphrase, it's no sign of good health to be, was it well settled in a profoundly sick society? I'm butchering that quote, but effectively, to fit into a society that is so far detached from what the human spirit, what the human soul needs to feel inspired, to be really well accustomed and fitting in with that so well, it's not really the best sign possible, because it's that inner child, it's that wild spirit in you. And like inner child, you might go, oh, well, I'm a man. It's that wild warrior in you. It's that king archetype, kings of freedom. You know, when you fit into the role of society growing up, I mean, the whole education system, how much laughter, how much joy, how much flow state is there imbued within that? Stephen Kotler, one of the world's leading experts in flow. I'm thinking Jim Quick, one of the world's leading experts in the mind and learning. They hack the education system to pieces because the fundamental way that the modern education system is set up has nothing to do with being able to settle into flow. Nothing to do with being able to memorize in the most optimized manner anything of word. There again, it's education system. Sit down, shut up. Wear the clothes we tell you. Speak when we tell you. Take on the information we tell you. Your motivation, your love of the subject, your right to express yourself, your right to move, your right to, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of ideas, freedom of creativity, freedom of flowing, which are most inspired truth that's coming through you in a moment? Not now. Don't fucking think so, is the message. And we learn to bow to that system. Some people don't. They're called the mavericks. They're called the bold ones. They're the ones that end up in the principal's office and, you know, expelled, etc. They're actually the intelligent ones. When I say that, I was one of the ones that I'm having a poke at myself growing up here. I was one of the ones that excelled academically. I fit into that system. I've spoken about that before in previous episodes. I excelled within that system. I submitted to the system, and like, hey, look, I did it. I didn't know any better, and I got on well. But I've been in rehabilitation ever since, refining my wildness, refining that badass person inside me that's unafraid to set a boundary and get the fuck on living my life, living in my truth, hacking out all that seriousness. you know, in the education system, a lot of seriousness. Like, there's always the exam results and seriousness that if you make a mistake, you get hacked. You get just way too much seriousness and hardness in it. And then, you know, men, there's this thing of being the hard man. I've spoken about this in many episodes, the conditioning that you need to be a hard man, you know, the tough man on the outer shell. Again, it's this seriousness. The serious man that can speak about all of these topics, that's unfeeling, tough man, macho man, stoic. But stoic in stoic philosophy is wonderful. The way a lot of people unconsciously use the words, like, oh, he's very stoic, just unfeeling, this emotionless being. I'm going to go back to, I want to invite you into a story, a part of my life in college. Second year in college, the shit had hit the fan. I was really not enjoying my physiotherapy studies. I just wasn't enjoying life at the time. There was so much self-esteem issues coming up for me. I was sort of on the inside. I didn't know how to admit it at the time. But, like, I was really fucked up. I had no directionality. I was questioning everything, but the discomfort and the confusion and questioning everything was having my inner world fall apart as I was trying desperately to keep an outer facade of, you know, I'm confident, Mark. I'm the man that comes in and I'm always inspired. I'm always friendly. I'm always happy. I've got my shit sorted. I'm good. Everything is good in Mark's life. How are you doing, Mark? I'm doing brilliant. You know, it was like, that was the facade. So on the inside, I was breaking down, going fucking insane and crazy on the inside because I just didn't have any psychological ground. My identity was breaking apart. My life, direction, future. I didn't know what the fuck I wanted. So a bit of meltdown in the inside as I tried to keep this outer facade going. But I kept nudging into it, and at this point, you know, in third year in college, I rejoined the course. I got a bit of stability back there, you know, rejoining the course, and maybe that sort of maintained my sanity for a bit. But I read a few books at this point. I was getting a little bit more comfortable with, you know, with psychology, spiritual teachings. So I was opening up my nervous system, my mind was beginning to open up to new ideas, new ways of doing things. And I remember fourth year in college, I moved into a house with a guy. This guy was in his 50s, he was practicing meditation, Buddhism, he was vegetarian, etc. He had life's experience. He had seen, I think it was in his, he had two marriages he'd went through with kids in both families. He was out the far side of that. He had went to a Buddhist retreat center to sort of reground himself for a year and a half. So he was a very grounded person, and he had a very beautiful, open-minded, open-hearted attitude about him. So I learned a lot in his presence, and it gave me sort of the groundedness and the feeling of safety to start sampling different ways of living. I started sampling a lot more vegetarianism. One of the major shifts in my fourth year in college was I sampled predominantly, I think it was like 95% of my fourth year in college, I didn't drink alcohol. Which, I know there's a good few of you listening in from Ireland, you fucking know well the Irish college scene and how it can be drink wise, and just my invitation to on a more global stage outside of Ireland. You know, maybe you have it there as well in your culture, but definitely in the Irish scene, I mean, there's a lot of alcohol consumption. Alcohol is predominantly, if you want to say, the social drug of choice. So I was used to, like, it was 3 years of hard drinking. Like, I drink 6-7 pints. It was a quiet night. I mean, on the one class night out of the week, I mean, it was 9-10 pints and maybe some shots, vodka, whiskey, whatever it was after that. You know, just hard drinking, a lot of alcohol. So for me to go from that level of drink, which I know now, I can look back, it was completely, I was drinking that level of drink to mask my radical lack of inner confidence, the radical lack of self-esteem that I had in the inside, that I had no capacity or no outer support that I knew was available to me. And there again, that lone wolf story, seeking help and support was like the last thing my nervous system could even contemplate investigating. So for me to start sampling and experimenting with not drinking, going out, was a radical shift for me. And it was such a change that it took some getting used to. And the first few times I did it, I remember I was feeling sort of, I was feeling the social isolation of it. Because normally, you know, I had this role where I was the class clown. I was the guy that, you know, a couple of drinks in him, there's going to be some crazy shit. I used to do crazy shit and the funny shit and be the center of the attention, the joker. And as I said, like the crazy shit, to always have the attention on me, on this facade of confidence. But it was actually to distract the fact that I was scared shitless to connect with women, the opposite sex. Any woman I was attracted to, like, that was like death zone for my profound fear of the feminine that I had been established in my interpretation, misinterpretation growing up at home. So I had this persona that I was always in the madness center of attention, drunk as a skunk. And it was crazy shit. And I do have happy memories, actually, looking back at some of the crazy shit. I'm glad I'm alive. It's a miracle I'm alive with some of the stuff I was doing. But like, hey, look, and I don't beat myself up for any parts of my journey. Like, you know, what my current perspective is now does not matter. I have fun looking back. But yeah, when I started going out and, you know, just drinking an orange juice or water, whatever it was, and not having this support in the nervous system, it was quite this gruntling at a time. There was a big change, and sort of my unease with the idea of it, not having that support, people around me started changing as well. And I've since, you know, intuitively tapped in that actually their changes had more to do with their lack of confidence, that, you know, me just stopping drinking, I wasn't playing the same role they were playing as well, which was the drink was masking their lack of self-esteem, their lack of ease going out. And by me taking my freedom and owning my position and not drinking, it was sort of putting a mirror up in front of them that created a bit of unease within them. At the time, however, I was so self-conscious, I didn't have this perspective. So it was even doubly upsetting for me and destabilizing in a way psychologically when I saw these other people changing their behavior, changing their attitude around me. I sort of took it as a slap in the face. So there was a point where it was almost like, oh man, you know, like keeping them going on, you know, just not drinking, it was almost not fun. But then this insight took me over one night. I was walking into this bar. It was like a bar, nightclub. There was a lot of music on and this hybrid place. And I just had this flash of inspiration come over me. I was like, I was looking all around me. And like, at this point, you know, we're well into the evening. College, bar, main night of the week. It's bopping. You know, people are well on it at this point. Most people are drunk around. There's craziness going. People are dancing, drinking, shouting, laughing. It's boisterous. It is what a mad night out is. And part of my psyche just whispered in my ear, it was like, what if you just pretend you're drunk? I'm even reliving this experience now. Because on one level it's like it's ridiculous. But on another level it's like, well, fuck me, I knew precisely what it was to be drunk. I knew how to play that role. And it was almost this intuitive insight of alcohol was just giving me the excuse excuse to act silly. Alcohol was almost like this thing in my hand that when I drink this and I've had enough of those drinks, there was some part of my psyche goes, it's game time. And from I use the term inner child, it's when my inner child, I would just allow it to come out. I've had a couple of beers now. I'm drunk. Part of my psyche, I'm fucking well allowed. You know, people know I'm drunk. I'm allowed. I've had a couple of drinks, I'm allowed say these silly things. I've had a couple of drinks, I'm allowed hug this person and lean in on top of them and shout a bit more, and I'm allowed sing, I'm allowed dance, I'm allowed be free, ultimately. Just because I've had the permission. Socially, people have seen me. I've drank, and I know there is like the definite neurological effect of alcohol in the system. It drops the inhibition within the system. Of course it relaxes. But there also was a permission point. So this part of my psyche, when I went in this time, down the steps into this place, it was like, what have I just pretended? And I went with it. Didn't question it. I was like, hey. And like, first person I met, it was like, you know, the not drunk me would have been, oh, hey, man. How are you doing? Yeah, oh, good night. How's your night? You know, it's like normal, small chit-chat. This time I still remember, like, my mate was like, hey, you know, what's happening, man? And, like, he was drunk. I was pretending to be drunk. And then it just was this tsunami of the normal fun. The normal crack. Then the next person. Hey, man, what's happening? Like, sort of just joking, laughing. And then there was a bit of singing and dancing for me. I don't know about you guys, dancing for me was like death. If you gave me the option, like if you lined it up before, you know, like in first year in college, second year in college, and you were like, okay, Mark, I can't even think. I'm like struggling to think what was a more terrifying ordeal for me. Going out dancing without drink. Or an option of, Mark, there's a Navy SEAL unit and they're flying out tonight. They're going straight into the center of Baghdad in the middle of the Gulf War. And you have to do this mission without training. They're going to suit you up and you're going to be fucked into it in the middle of it all. And, you know, good luck with that. Best of luck. I'd be like, yeah, when's the helicopter? When's the jet leaving? At Baghdad. Let's do it. Fucking dancing for me was... The experience of dancing for me, because of my upbringing, what I witnessed at home, there was always this humor at home, and there was always like a takedown. It was always planted in the terms of humor, so it sort of always seemed funny. There was a lot of laughter, but there was a lot of laughter in takedowns of, if you did anything different, if you sang, you're going to be laughed at. If you dance, you're going to be laughed at. If you did something out of the ordinary, you're going to be laughed at. If you got a haircut that was a little bit out of the ordinary, you're going to be laughed at. If you wore or got some clothes that sort of was like, oh, who's this fancy fuck coming in with this? You're going to be laughed at. There was a lot of humor, and to a point, screw it. Like, I'm glad I had a childhood that there was a lot of humor infused in it, a lot of laughter. I mean, it's nicer to go through that. There's other manifestations of psychological lack of ease in families that, fuck it, I'm glad I got the humorous lottery ticket to a point. Yet, it had a very profound effect on my nervous system, on my psyche growing up, on my mind. So, dancing for me was, from an inner experiential perspective, when I go out on that floor, I'm going to appear that fucking awkward, that... disconnected with my body, so out of sync with the music, that my mind, and this sounds so irrational, but like, you know, the mind is irrational when it comes to deep emotional sort of trauma and perspectives. It's like my mind assumed every person in that disco, in that bar, at that moment, were looking at me directly or indirectly and fucking laughing at me. That's what it felt like. It was catastrophic. It was so difficult for me to relax in, because it was like, people are just thinking I'm silly. People are just This is stupid. They're thinking like I'm the worst answer possible. He looks like if female fucking looked at me, and he's the most unattractive, unconfident. They see how unconfident I am. It was like a social suicide mission for me to go dancing. So much so, even when I was drinking a lot, I mean, I didn't hit the dance floor till, I mean, I had to be well on it. It was like 7, 8, 9 pints. I don't know. I had to be so drunk that at that point, you know, the proper drug-like state that drink brings upon. But psychologically, I just like, oh, I'm so sloshed that I just, it was a messy, messy affair. So that's the perspective. However, this night, and like this is the first time that I tried this, this strategy. I might call it a strategy now, but this spontaneous strategy that came upon me, this attitude that I would take, I was like, okay, it's go time. So I'm here, I've had beautiful conversations, I've been joking, I've been laughing, I've been effectively pretending that I'm drunk. I'm having the night of my life, because the difference was, I'm actually conscious. I was conscious in the middle of it all. I was having fun, but so cognizant of the feeling of inspiration that was taking my body over. And then sort of the music started, and hey, it's like sort of dance time. I remember there was a bit of trepidation. It was like, okay, but I was feeling good. And then I just went, hey, double down, you know. It was almost this feeling, Mark, if you were on pint number 8, 9, at this point, I mean, everybody around you, they're beginning to dance, they're fucking throttle drunk, just fucking join in. So I went with it. Bum, 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 and I was just like moving with it, and I was just smiling, and people were smiling back, and funnily enough, the memory's coming back. I actually remember guys standing there, and it's like I could see myself in them. These guys standing with the pint glass, still dead as a doornail, looking on at people having all this fun. And I was like, wow. I still have this memory. It's coming up now. It's like, wow. Like I was seeing myself. It's like that was me 3 weeks previously. That was me for the previous 3-4 years of my life. Stuck in this seriousness, stuck in this role, stuck in this self-conscious role where you can't fucking relax. Cut a long story short, it's like I had the night of my life. It was the most exhilarating night out I had had in to that time. And it's like Kings of Freedom, many, many years later, Kings of Freedom. I was free. I was so free that night. It was exhilarating. I was dancing. I was laughing. I was saturated in sweat by the end of the night. I just danced for 2 hours straight. It was amazing. And I ended up having many experiences like that for the rest of that year. The end of that college year, I ended up, I think the last 2 days, my class went off. I said, oh, here, I went in the drink for a weekend. And to be honest, yeah, whatever. It was quite crazy madness again, but you know, it just wasn't the same. I found it just wasn't the same. It wasn't the same kick. And I think about maybe 7, 8 months after that, I'd end up having my last drink of alcohol. Because there just was this inner realization. There's this part of my psyche, and by extension, my invitation for you is to drop in. There's some part of our psyche, Kings of Freedom. There's a part of our psyche, of our mind, where we can tap into a level of freedom that is literally uncommon. That is a level of freedom of expression that is radically beyond the conditioned story of how we are meant to show up as men. Serious. Meant to show up, not allowed to dance, because to dance is to be emotionally in tune with your body. You know, like a hard man doesn't dance. A hard man doesn't remain calm and relaxed and humorous in the middle of a serious meeting. He's meant to be serious. You know, a proper man talks about all of these, the news, and has deep conversations about the concern about where the economy and the market and the price of things and all of this sort of bullshit that continually, on a daily basis, tunes you out of this inspiration within you tunes you to the polar opposite of enthusiasm. Think about enthusiasm. You know, enthusiasm of life when you're drunk. You know, that's what being drunk is about. That's what's intoxicating about being intoxicated. I mean, you have a full permission and felt experience of being in full enthusiasm. The root of the word enthusiasm is entheos, the God within. There's a spiritual experience. Think about spirits in Ireland anyway. It's like, oh, the spirits section. Spirit. Inspirational. In spirit. The wording, there again, we cast spells with the words we use. Why do we call them spirits? And the alcohol, the high alcohol, that's the spirit section. You've become into spirit. Yet the fullest freedom, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't drink. If you're drinking alcohol, it's like, it's your sovereign choice. You know, we have this choice. I'm just inviting you to a perspective that maybe there's a point, and I believe there is experientially, and I see it in different people, there's a point beyond that when you can drop in. You can access a point of freedom of expression and exhilaration and humor and inspiration and joy and bliss and fun and playfulness, and that is so beyond the need for any external stimulant to drop you in there. You just have that freedom. The interesting thing about all of this, and coming from the title, The Drunken Taoist, many years later, and I would actually, through getting married and having kids and moving country, and I've spoke about this in detail before, like, I dropped back into seriousness. Fuck me, like, the whole adult serious role, that took me and almost killed me. And my mind almost killed me with the level of seriousness that I ended up bringing into my life and creating massive intense suffering within. So I lost contact with that capacity to choose my attitude. Essentially, it's a choice of attitude. But many years later, I sort of tapped back into it and doing more and deep inner work. And then one day I read in a book about Taoism, Wu Wei, effortless action, you know, being in the flow of life. I love the metaphors that Taoism uses, like the one of the main metaphors is like life is like a river, you just go with the flow of it. But they make the point that so often we're grabbing on desperately to branches at the riverside just because there's stability, it's the known, it's the predictable. When you're grabbing on desperately to that branch, you know that bank, that part of the river, you know your environment, whereas the great fear is to let go and just go with the flow. So they're all about going with the flow. And the most interesting thing was that one old ancient Taoist sort of idea was, they said, like, to get into the experience of Tao, to flow with the Tao, to flow with life, they actually advised to imagine that you were just after having, you know, two or three drinks. So many, many years later, from one of the deepest philosophical wisdom traditions on the planet of ancient China was this idea again, this, if you want to say it, psychological hack, this idea that, yeah, pretending that you're drunk, pretending that you're just after having two or three drinks and you're just pretending, thus giving yourself permission to get a bit giddy, to get a bit, you know, a little bit flow, a little bit, you're just smiling. Everybody else is serious, but you're just, you know, imagine, I'm playfully inviting you here, but actually quite sincerely inviting you as well. I invite you to reflect upon those situations in your daily life where seriousness is the order of the day. You know, the business meeting, the meeting at the doctor, the serious talk with your wife about your kids and what's going to happen at school and the teacher's giving out and blah, 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 whatever it is. The serious chat because you have to talk with your brother-in-law about them visiting and the shit that went on before, and there's just been like a 10-year experience of hassle and grief both sides that has not been spoken to. The economy, finances. You will have your precise situations that triggers a level of seriousness in you. Maybe it's a daily thing at work where it's just a lot of seriousness. You're in a leadership position. Maybe you're an entrepreneur. There's a lot of stuff on your shoulders. You feel that there's a lot of heaviness, serious responsibilities that you get caught up in that creates quite a bit of stress for you that in the end, in the evening, you find that you're quite worn down at the end of this, of these type of experiences. So bring to mind one, if you can, have one of the most serious type regular experiences you go with, a type of conversation, a type of work scenario, you'll know the one, where you get trapped in seriousness. And my invitation, provocative challenge now is, imagine how that would be different if you consciously chose, before you entered that segment of time, before you, I'm gonna pretend that it's like a meeting, just to give it some bit of an established bit of language on it. Like there's a big meeting where it's the board of directors and it's the partners in the company. They're all there. Your proposal on, like, you know, the running of the business, the profits that potentially can come in or might not come in, all are loaded on this proposal. So serious stuff. Now, if you go in, but before you go in, you set this intention. You're like, I'm going to pretend like I have two or three drinks in me. And like two or three drinks, you know, the inhibitions are down. Things are just going to fucking go. They're going to roll your way. You're feeling confident. Two or three drinks, you know, nervous system is just relaxing. Your body's relaxing. You're not hard. There's no stress. You're de-stressed. You're feeling soft. Soft body. So you just, you pretend, you allow your nervous system, you invoke this feeling of drunkenness, this flow, possibly even giddiness. There's a smile in your face. You're so relaxed. And you go in and you haven't had a drink, but you're feeling, you know, this spaciousness about you. This confidence radiates to the room. Things are going your way. Your movement is nice. Voice is nice. Eyes are sparkling. You know, you're in this flow. How are people reacting around you? You're flowing in the room. Your confidence permeates everywhere. You're relaxed like you were never relaxed before in these people. And these people, they know you. They know how you normally are under pressure. Now they're feeling, wow, there's something different about him. He must be really confident about this proposal. God, that proposal, and like there was that bit of humor that you got in at the in the middle of it, and how you interacted with people during your presentation, and then the questions and answers afterwards, how you sort of provocatively prodded and poked at the CEO, but like the CEO was so relaxed, you were so dropped in. Remember, you were pretending that you had two or three drinks, so it's like you're at the Christmas party, where, you know, that's why we have Christmas parties, you know, so people can relax and get to know each other. But you're bringing this attitude, inner attitude, to your meeting. Now you're dominating the room because you're the only drunk person there. You're the only one flowing with enthusiasm. You're the only one that is in a non-serious state of being. You're in flow. Every single cell in your body is at that two or three drinks, just the party's just getting going type of an attitude. But you're in the party's just getting going type of attitude with a boring, serious motherfucking proposal that, if you really tuned in, tapped in, turned on to what was in that, it would bore you sick, probably to a level with the inherent seriousness. But there's no inherent seriousness. And this is the point I want to make clear. The adult role of seriousness is that on a perceptional condition level, is that there is an inherent seriousness with business. There's an inherent seriousness with having a deep conversation about your marriage. There's an inherent seriousness about hearing about the political unfoldment of stuff on the planet. There's an inherent seriousness when you hear about the economy and it's up and it's down and what's going to happen. From an absolute point of truth, there's no seriousness anywhere. There's Tibetan Buddhist practitioners that, like, their practice is to take the seriousness out of death. Think about it. Their whole practice is to practice spiritually such a level of inner freedom that death, they can meet death like whistling their point to death. They couldn't give a shit about debt. They're actually feeling like they're in the two or three drinks. I'm just flowing. I'm just happy. The party's just getting going and they're about to die. This physical life in this body is about to end and they're in the Tao. They're in the flow. They're in nature mind. Not giving a flying fuck about it in the face of debt. There's no inherent seriousness about anything. If you think about the capacity of peak performers that as men, I'm going to, you know, sometimes it can be very easy to go, oh, well, you know, that's Tibetan monks, like it's fucking okay for them, like they can sit in a cave, like meditating for 40 years. I mean, that's not available to me. It's like, that's not manly, you know, they don't have family in that. And, you know, think of other performers that maybe our modern conditioned masculine mind can resonate with. Think about peak masculine performers who have experienced a level of inner mastery. You know, I think one guy I resonate with a lot and his teachings on is like Jocko Willink, ex-Navy SEAL commander. Jocko details his trained capacity. He nurtured this capacity within him to be in the middle of literally like a gunfight where there are people dying around him. There are decisions he needs to make where literally it's a second too long making the decision can cause death to his own team. Making a decision a second too quick can cause death to his team. It's this life and death. You're in the thick of it. But he would talk about training himself and developing this capacity to be so in the zone that there was no life or death. So in the zone that there was no emotional panic at all. He was just so in flow that, and his nervous system with the breath work, with the inner practices he was doing, he was so tuned in, tapped in, turned on to the intuitive flow in the moment that his wisdom would just see the right decision at the right time, with the right read, with the right delay strategy when a delay was needed, with the right, we gotta fucking act now, there's not another moment that we can lose here. He would get it right predominantly. And then, of course, he would reflect at times, but he would talk about this capacity to drop in, like to this soft, creative flow, this inner experience, where there was, he would access this part of his mind that was completely free of any perception that there was an inherent seriousness about what he was facing. The regular mind would be like, oh, it's fucking serious, people are going to die here. And in fact, like he reports, there's certain people caught up in the seriousness of him. He was on, like, in communication with other people from other parts of the Marines and people like sort of shouting down the radio to him to make a certain decision that he had the ultimate decisional capacity, but like they were, in one scenario I'm thinking of, it's like, oh, you know, my man is going to die, like from the Marines, not the Navy SEALs unit. It's like, they're my man out there. So Jocko has to make a decision, but he's soft. He's fine. There's no inherent seriousness. He's in the zone. That level, to not get caught in the seriousness, that level to have such an independent part of your mastery, masculine mastery. And remember, the masculine practice on the road to masculine mastery is embodied consciousness. It's a practice of being present. That's the masculine core practice. And being completely present, you're independent of, you know, memories of failures of the past, depression looking back, and anxiety looking forward, expectations. This could fuck up. I'm doomed here. Masculine core practice is being so embodied in your consciousness, the witnessing awareness in the present moment, that you couldn't give a fuck. You're not caught up in the past. You're not caught up in the future. You're just present. That's playfulness. That's the Wu Wei. That's the Taoist flow. I think of other ones that I remember seeing one jiu-jitsu top end match where Hiron Gracie, like at a top end, is being hunted down by André Galvão, who's like this badass Brazilian guy, really tough end, hard cookie. So he's being hunted down like incessantly by André Galvão, and Galvão has him in side control, which is a really oppressive position in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It's a really dominant where it's side control, you're being controlled. But the commentary is being done by Hiron Gracie's brother, one of the commentators, the brother. And so one commentator says to the brother, it's like with a close-up on Hiron's face, in this intense side control where Galvão is just like slowly but surely, you know, making his next move to take Hiron out of it, the commentator goes to Hiron's brother. He's like, it looks like your brother, it looks like he's almost asleep. And Henner Gracie, his brother, just goes, yeah, well, his state of consciousness, his physiological, neurological state of being, and psychologically, he is almost in a state that he's just about to fall asleep. He is that relaxed. So there again, this top-end masculine mastery performance being embodied in that moment is the situation seems like it's inherently a stressful situation. It's inherently serious. He should be tightened up. This guy is out to kill. This guy is out to submit him. This guy is out to ruin his reputation, to be the victor, to, like, he's staring defeat in the face. He's about to fall asleep. He's so soft, he's so relaxed, he's so not serious that his body is completely relaxed. And here's the funny thing. His performance is in a nanosecond. His peak performance is available in that state of being. Jocko Willink, in the middle of hell, his performance, because he relaxes into this inner state of being, this complete state of presence, his performance, his capacity to make the right decision at the right nanosecond, at the right moment, to get the right decision for him, is optimized. So the invitation, guys, as a strategy, this is deep dive into finding flow. And in finding flow, it's supporting your nervous system to get the fuck out of this hyper-serious adult role that has been conditioned on us from years of not being allowed joke, not being allowed run around, not being allowed laugh as kids, being told to sit down, be quiet in school, in church, in religion, at home with your parents, and this adult role of seriousness that has been projected on us. We're at Kings of Freedom. This is the podcast. The invitation is for you, the challenge actually, core of masculine practice is challenge. I challenge you in that key, in one of those key areas where you can feel a lot of seriousness, a lot of stress comes on you. I provocatively, humorously, but sincerely challenge you. The next time you face that, imagine, set that segment intention up of imagining that you're going in, that you've two or three drinks. See how it goes. Imagine you're just that little bit drunk. Play with it. You're just a little bit relaxed. You're smiling. You're laughing. You're in flow. You know, when maybe you're a little bit, oh, hi, guys. It's like, hi, guys. You know, it's like just fucking, you allow that enthusiasm flow. Imagine coming in home from work, you know. Okay, you feel yourself, you tune in, you check in with your body, and you're a little bit caught up, you know, you got caught up with the seriousness of the day. But hey, you're going in home now. So, you set up the segment. You're like, imagine what it would be like if, before you go in, you go in with the attitude of, I'm just after having two or three drinks. You know, you might need to tell your queen afterwards that you haven't had two or three drinks. You're just after driving in home from work. There could be serious issues there. But you just go in with the attitude. You break up the seriousness. You break up the stressed. Oh, I'm going to go in and I'm going to grump about work. I'm going to offload my shit. No, instead, you go in with the attitude, I've had two or three drinks. I'm in party time. Hey, guys, how's your day? And you're soft and you're laughing and you're humorous and you sit down with the kids. You play with them for a few minutes. You know, you're imagining that you're uninhibited and you go over to your beautiful queen. You're not talking about the stress at work. You're not grumping or complaining about stuff. You go over to her. Remember, you're pretending you're a little bit drunk and you just grab her like you would in party mode and you just kiss her and you cuddle in and you whisper some bold thing in her ear about, you know, what you're wishing and fantasizing you do with her that night, or you're fantasizing you do with her there now. Because why? You're feeling bold. You're feeling joking, happy. She's wondering what the fuck, but she's smiling now. How would your life be different? If you started accessing this attitude as a strategy, as a self-ordained permission to get bold, as a self-permission to get a little bit drunk, to get a little bit not so serious, a little bit playful, a little bit inner childish, a little bit, I don't give a fuck about the seriousness of life. I am just here to be tuned in, tapped in, turned on to my most inspired self, to my most enthusiastic self, and I'm just going to choose that as my default practice. The more you do that, the more your external results will improve. The more you do that, the more smiles your goddess is going to beam back at you. The more you do that and you bring that playfulness, the more your parenting is going to be infinitely more effective. 5 minutes of this attitude around your kids are going to have enough of your presence. They're going to get the fuck back with what they're playing. 30 minutes of your presence when you're tick and you're caught up in the seriousness of it, your kids don't want to let you go. They haven't had enough, that you haven't been present. It's the same with your goddess. Your effectiveness, your productivity at work, it's going to skyrocket. Because why? Allowing yourself the permission to get into flow, to get into this bold, badass, tuned in, tapped in, turned on to the inspiration, source energy, rippling through your body, inner child, fucking you're there to experience fun and playfulness, everything in your life is going to get better. This is the inner state. This is called peak flow, finding flow. It's a peak performance state of being. And just tuning it, tapping it back into what intuitively came to me as an idea back in college, pretending to be drunk, and I just ended up dropping my nervous system into experiencing exhilaration and a freedom of expression that I never experienced to that point. And I got disconnected for many years from that as a possibility. And I'm just reconnecting with it recently, you know, with my wife and kids, how I am around home. And hence I'm doing this episode now. I felt the experiential felt benefits of it in my own life. And, you know, in the face of business challenges with Kings of Freedom, just getting tuned in, tapped in, turned on. Let's get fucking playful here. Let's just get into flow. There's no seriousness here. Let's just flow and get creative. I'm finding the embodied benefits of it, and I so wanted to share this with you because, as I say, I've experienced so much seriousness in my own life that cut me off from the flow of life and the deepest meaning of lived experience of just feeling free. That's why I really wanted to gift this to you, to serve you powerfully. And it's my absolute expectation that, you know, like any of these ideas here in this podcast, if you have, and I know so many of the messages I'm getting back, and I'm so grateful, I'm so appreciative to the messages that I get online, social media, private messages, emails coming to me, where Those of you, and many of you are engaging with these ideas. There's so many benefits that you're feeling, and your life, your personal life, your energy. I've had reports of, you know, marital relationships, parenting, capacity to show up confidently in work, etc. Just to be a happier man, a king of freedom, free in your expression. That there's so many benefits for those of you that are implementing and bringing these ideas into your life. And that's so deeply meaningful. I'm so appreciative of you for having the courage. I want to acknowledge you for having the courage to implement information. Information just memorized, that's a no benefit to you, no benefit to the world. But information actually embodied and brought into life in wholehearted two or three drinks in your system, engagement with life with great joy, that's deeply transformational, not only for you, but for your family, for your loved ones, your goddess, your kids, people at work, and life on earth, really, in a very deep way. So that's why I do what I do here at the podcast, kingsoffreedom.me. So by you engaging, it's so deeply meaningful for me. It brings a smile to my face to know that the world is a little bit better from some of this stuff that's been put out. Guys, I think we're good at that point. Have fun with this one. Have fun pretending you're drunk. Just don't do it in the presence of police on the way home from work. With that, everything that was said was perfect. What remains unsaid will be said at another time when it is perfect. With deep bows and big love, have a beautiful kingly day.